Hey friends, and welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and as you know, I'm a registered dietitian, but I'm also a fitness professional. And part of where these two passions for me really marry is that one of my goals is to really shift the way the fitness industry approaches nutrition, approaches wellness, and really create more of an inclusive space where we're having more of these conversations about celebrating all different body types and making sure that everyone leaves class feeling welcome, regardless of their shape, their size, their ability, but also not feeling like you have to exercise in order to earn your food, but to get to a place where you can move and you can attend group fitness classes, you can attend the gym, you can attend these different environments because you can, because you want to, because you like how it makes you feel. Not as a negative or punishment type of thing. And sorry for that buzz in the background. I co-share my podcasting studio with my husband, and I do not know how to turn off his alerts. So let's get into it. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing Sadie Simpson. Sadie's a group exercise instructor, certified intuitive eating counselor, and health educator in Asheville, North Carolina. With over 13 years of experience in the wellness industry, 10 in fitness management, she has now seen how disordered behaviors from gym members, but also fitness professionals, can be all-consuming. Over-exercising, yo-yo dieting, weight cycling, body obsession, and fat phobia, and has personally experienced these things herself. Throughout this time, she began to notice a dissonance in regards to nutrition, weight loss, and body image in this gym setting. Weight loss is actually one of the top five reasons people join a gym. However, most frontline staff aren't trained to legally give out weight loss advice. But because we're constantly asked about this stuff, most folks either give out a generic response that's not well received by the client, or they step outside of their scope of practice and disregard professionalism by prescribing meal plans or supplements. On top of that, research shows us that most people who lose even 5 to 10% of their body weight will have regained that weight within 1 year. Members and class participants in a constant cycle of frustration with eating and exercise, and trainers and instructors are at a loss of how to appropriately guide those who look to us for advice. Because of this, Sadie has made it her mission to change the conversation and help shift the paradigm from centering weight loss as the reason to pursue behaviors that promote physical and mental health, while also helping others cultivate a positive relationship with eating, exercise, and body image. Currently, she offers one-on-one virtual coaching designed to help people reclaim their time, energy, and money from diet culture so that they can recreate a lifestyle of alignment. She uses the intuitive eating framework to coach her clients through boundary setting, practical self-care, and untangling beliefs around food and fitness that prevent them from living a fulfilling life. You can also find her teaching Zumba and Aqua Zumba every week at her local YMCA. So you will definitely hear our bond and our love for the YMCAs. And we really just have a conversation about how we as professionals can and should be doing more and what things to look for you as the consumer, as the member, as the participant. What are some red flags for you to look out for so that you can find an environment that is along the lines of your goals of this non-diet, non-black and white approach. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to give us a review after you subscribe. That would make more sense. And tag us on Instagram at FitFriendsHappyHour so that we can say hi and repost your stories. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Sadie, welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're so happy to have you today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Okay, just so you all listening get a visual, Sadie is sitting in her closet, like she's got coats. And if you're unfamiliar with the podcasting world, this is normal. This is normal that you're sitting in a closet, and I actually so appreciate it.
Yeah, this is the best place for me to be right now to kind of hide from everybody in my house. And the sound is the best in here, so it's awesome.
You're like, oh yeah, the sound. I actually had this was when I was still in clinical, and we switched to virtual. I worked in pediatrics and we had a virtual visit, right? Because like your doctor's visits are all virtual now. And one of the moms was in a bathtub. We're like, are you okay? And she's like, no, I just, it's quiet in here. We're like, okay, yes. Works for you, works for us.
Wherever you got to go to kind of get away, you go there.
Right. So tell us about yourself and how you got into fitness.
Oh gosh, this could be a long story, could be a short story. I'll try to give you like the medium of the road length story. So I'm Sadie Simpson. Currently, I live in the Asheville, North Carolina area, and I've been here for about 10-ish years, I would say. And it's been an interesting journey to get to this point. So currently what I do is online virtual coaching, and I also teach some group exercise classes in person and recently got back into that. Our gym recently reopened on a smaller scale after COVID. But it's kind of interesting how I got to this point, because as a child, I was never athletic. I tried to do anything I could to get out of running the mile run in PE, like hated anything having to do with sports. My parents signed me up for our Optimists, which is like recreation basketball. Mm-hmm. Played that for a couple of years reluctantly, never was into it, did not like it. But when I was, I think 14 or 15, we had a YMCA opened in our town, a small town right outside of Charlotte called Lincolnton. Shout out to the Lincoln County YMCA. The Y opened when I was about 15 years old, and my family decided to join. So we got this charter membership, and my mom and my dad and my two sisters, that's just kind of, it turned into this thing that we did in the evenings. Like we would go to the Y. And I can remember one of the first times we were there, I had the orientation where they show you how to use the equipment. And as a high schooler that was never really into exercise or fitness or anything, I was like, this is weird. Like, why do people come here and do these things on these machines? Like, wasn't into it at all. But again, just because it was this thing that our family did, I just kind of went and mashed buttons on the treadmill and just sort of hung out for a little while my family was there. And one night, I can still kind of vividly picture this moment. One night I was like, I'm going to try out a class. I'm going to see what these exercise classes are all about. And there was this cardio kickboxing class happening, and it was a husband and wife duo team teaching this class. And they were like the epitome of what you would think you would see on like an exercise video and that type of thing. And I loved it. I went in again, kind of reluctant to take a class like that, but like the kicking and the punching and like the choreography and the music and all that, like after that first exercise class, that first cardio kickboxing class, that was it for me. I was done. Like, I am a group exercise person from here on out. That's how that sort of came to be.
I love that so much. And I don't want to interrupt you, but I love that you're talking about the YMCA, because that's kind of where my story with fitness began too, was a YMCA. And like forever, still to this day, YMCAs hold a special place in my heart. Like I've taken on different teaching roles and opportunities, and I'm like, but you won't make me sign a non-compete, right? Because I still have to teach at the Y. Like,
yes, I'm the same. Like I am a YMCA person through and through, and you'll kind of hear, I mean, that's a big part of my story and my journey, like to why I am where I am today too. Like I took that class, and throughout the rest of high school, like I would take classes here and there, all the yoga and cycle and step aerobics at the time. Like I even took step, which is kind of weird to think about now. But even one summer, my younger sister and my best friend and I, there was a line dancing class, and we were the only people under the age of like 65 in this line dancing class. But it was like the greatest thing ever, and solidified the fact that I love these group movement environments. Like I love this kind of thing. And I would take classes here and there. When I was in college and when I graduated college, I wound up getting a job, a teaching job. I went to college actually to be a high school English teacher. I got a teaching job back in my hometown. And once again, taking those classes at the YMCA, and an instructor mentioned that they were looking for other people to start teaching classes in the evenings. And I'd always kind of had it in the back of my mind that I could do this. Like I could teach some of these classes.
Yeah.
So I did.
Oh, I love
and
it.
I guess like that's probably how a lot of people kind of get started. They have an instructor, kind of a mentor, or somebody sort of urge them to try this thing and to do this thing. And that's sort of how I got started in fitness.
What was the first format that you started teaching?
Oh God. The first thing I ever taught was a strength and core class. And it was awful, like terrible. I got just the basic generic YMCA foundations of group exercise, like low level certification to start off with. So, you know, no specialty formats at the time. And yeah, and that first strength and core class, like, I don't know if you can remember back to your first class, but I can still vividly remember like planning this routine and coming up with all these workouts and things and thinking that it was just going to be the greatest thing ever. And at least two or three, if not more, people walked out in the middle of class. Like it was just this, you know, awful thing.
You put on the microphone and your brain just goes poof, like you can't even form words or thoughts, and everything you planned went out the door. Oh, yes. I think if there's any fitness instructors listening, they're like nodding their heads like, uh-huh. I remember my first mess of a class. But we all start somewhere, right? So what did your journey look like from there? Because you're also an intuitive eating counselor. So tell us, how did you get involved with that or even stumble upon intuitive eating?
Yeah. So I continue to teach group exercise classes at the YMCA in the evenings, on the weekends and things like that, while I was teaching high school English, 10th and 11th grade during the day. And honestly, like I hated my teaching job, hated working in the school. Like it was just not for me. And I always had this thought like, hey, I could work at the Y. Like I would really like to find a career path here in fitness and in health and in wellness. And I wound up going back to grad school online still while I was teaching for a health education degree, which was heavily involved in like nonprofit management and that side of things. And I really was very much into that throughout the whole time I was working on my health education master's. I kept applying for jobs at places at the YMCA, yes, but kind of other similar like health-based nonprofits while still teaching group exercise classes. And I wound up getting a 35-hour a week low-paying job as a fitness director in the small recreation center kind of near Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I took this job and I was teaching probably 10, 12, 13 group exercise classes a week. And in addition to that, doing all the scheduling and the hiring and the interacting with members and event planning and that sort of thing. And it was kind of during that time when I began to really get into the mindset of like, okay, cool. I'm teaching like 10 or 11, 12 group exercise classes a week. I'm burning all these calories. Like, yeah, like I'm getting paid to work out. This is amazing. And that kind of fed into this whole, I don't want to necessarily say obsession, but kind of a negative place of over-exercising and under-eating and getting to a point where I was being very obsessed, like body obsessed almost, with being able to teach these classes as part of my job, but also kind of incorporate that into some disordered behaviors with eating and exercise. I was never, you know, never officially had an eating or exercise diagnosed disorder, but definitely fell into some disordered eating and movement behaviors during that time.
Mm-hmm. As an instructor, you know, I can relate to that so much as well. And tell me if you agree with this or not, but for me, it was always, oh, well, this is my job. And it was very easy to almost cover up some of that disordered behavior or beliefs around exercise because it's what you do. It's your job, right? And so it must be healthy. And at the same time, you're being held up on this pedestal of, I'm a fitness professional. I'm a role model. You know, look at me. And this is what you're supposed to do, right? So tell us more how that morphed.
Yeah. So eventually that morphed into we moved again for my husband's job, and I left that job. And once again, I found myself back at the YMCA teaching group exercise classes part-time. And during that time, continuing to finish my master's degree and applying for other jobs within the YMCA organization that I was in. And I wound up kind of moving up through the ranks there pretty quickly, like group exercise coordinator while still teaching probably 10 classes a week. The wellness director, I eventually became the wellness and membership director and got really involved with a lot of the aspects of the Y. And kind of during that time, like while I was, again, still teaching classes, doing all the administrative stuff, it got to a point where I realized that these behaviors, like this over-exercising, kind of like you said too, being masked as, oh, well, this is my job. Like it got to a point where it just didn't feel right. I don't know if there was an exact moment of clarity or anything like that, but thinking about just the amount of hours I was spending moving and teaching movement and exercising and just, and all of this stuff, it got to the point to where I knew something needed to change. There had to be something different than all of this exercise. And again, on the eating side of thing, like I was like anybody else tracking my calories on my Fitness Pal and doing all the things that everybody does. And I got burned out of all of it. And it just didn't feel right for me anymore. So I started researching like what else is out there? What can I do to have and to maintain some sort of healthy lifestyle, but not be so obsessed almost and so into the throes of exercise and burning calories and that sort of thing. And I stumbled across the book Intuitive Eating. And this was probably, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years ago, maybe. I'm Google search, Amazon, I don't know. I stumbled across it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I got this book and I started reading it. And like every time I turned the page, I was like, oh, that's me. Oh, I'm this person.
It's mind-blowing. You're like, I feel exposed.
Yes, exactly. And I read the book and I underlined everything and I highlighted everything and I read it again and again and again and again. And I started like talking about it like to some of the people who took my group exercise classes. And at the time I was personal training a little bit and I was like, here, personal training client, like here's a copy of this book, go forth and read it. And didn't really, you know, give a whole lot of additional context around it, but I kind of sporadically would talk about intuitive eating and stuff here and there with some of my clients and people who came to my classes and things like that. But it almost evolved into this thing that, okay, wow, this is, it cracked open and unearthed almost this side of health and beliefs and behaviors that I just never knew existed when I stumbled upon this framework.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I always explain it to people too, is that, or at least to clients, you know, you can't unlearn this stuff. Like yes. You said, once you learn it, it's just, you can go deeper and deeper and deeper. So were you finally to the point, like, I talk about this enough, I guess I might as well get certified.
Pretty much. I was doing some online personal training and some online health and fitness coaching kind of on the side of my full-time YMCA job. And after I had a kid, like I was determined, I was like, oh, I'm never quitting my job. Like I'm always going to go to work. Like this is, and I loved it. Like I loved my job at the YMCA. It was, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of hours for not a lot of pay, but I loved it. And I loved the people and the community. And just like, I really enjoyed it. But after probably about 6 months after my son was born, like I was back, you know, working for a couple months prior to that. That's, again, that's something else that'll crack you open and change you in ways you never imagined that you would, you know, never expect that you would change. And I had been doing some online coaching and stuff on the side, again, mostly just fitness stuff and just generic health stuff. And it got to the point where I started thinking, okay, well, I've been doing some of this online stuff and I can't really do that while trying to have a newborn and working this full-time nonprofit job. And I wound up leaving my full-time job at the Y to kind of dive headfirst into running an online business for myself. And I dabbled into a couple of different, you know, formats of personal training and health coaching. And again, throughout all of that, it always came back to intuitive eating. Like, again, I was always like bringing in concepts that I had learned from reading and studying this framework for the last 6 or 7 or 8 years. And I decided, I was like, I need to make this thing legit and official and pursued the intuitive eating professional certification, which is what led me kind of to where I am right now.
That's awesome. I love hearing just your story and how it got you to where you are. And I think, you know, so much of your story and our stories make the type of coach and health professional that you become. And so as you're learning this weight inclusive framework, explain to us, what does it mean to be weight inclusive? And how did learning about intuitive eating transform you as a fitness professional?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question. So to me, especially in a fitness setting, because again, I do some online coaching that is more related directly to intuitive eating, but I'm still teaching my classes at the YMCA a couple times a week. And there's a lot of carryover there. And in a fitness setting, to me, like weight inclusive and being weight inclusive means to create a welcoming environment that really invites people to participate regardless of their size. And from a facility perspective too, ensuring, you know, that there is equipment, adequate equipment and classes and things that are appropriate for all people and that it is inclusive. But it's interesting, like when I think about weight and size inclusivity, especially in a fitness setting, we automatically, especially as fitness professionals, we think like, duh, we are inviting, we are welcoming, we are inclusive for all people. But at the same time, sort of questioning a little bit deeper, like, are we really that inclusive? And I think that there's a lot of lack of representation, like from the fitness side of things. And there's a lot of stigma and fat phobia in a fitness setting, even in somewhere like the YMCA that is openly welcoming and inviting and inclusive. There's just this underlying stigmatization almost that fat people, people in larger bodies may not fit into this setting. So I think as a fitness professional and as a group exercise instructor, looking at frameworks like intuitive eating and health at every size and things that are aligned with those principles and really learning about what weight stigma is and kind of unpacking some of the fat phobia that we may have as fitness professionals and being able to recognize where there's some areas of opportunity from, again, like a facility level or a leadership level or a frontline staff level is really, really, really important. And I'm saying this from, you know, from the perspective, I'm a straight size person. I have an immense amount of body privilege. And even though, like, I personally have been doing this type of learning and work, and I imagine you probably have been too, like unraveling these just depths and years of fat phobia and things like that. Like, I feel like we all have a lot to learn, but using that privilege to kind of to speak in those circles where we may have a little bit of influence, especially in a fitness setting, I think is really is necessary and it is important.
Yes, 100%. And I would agree with you. And I'd imagine how it is in Indiana. It's probably similar, you know, in the Carolinas, right? Like all over the world or all over the country, the YMCA, yes, is known for, and that's something that I've always loved is the diversity, right? But there's really, I think, a spectrum kind of what it means to be inclusive. And so I challenge, you know, somebody who's listening, especially if you're a fitness instructor or a fitness professional or whatever role that you are, that you're inclusive, but like you said, are you really going a little bit deeper? And yes, maybe you have different, you know, let's say races in your class, but are there different body types? Are there larger bodies? Are there smaller bodies? What about age, right? Inclusive can mean a lot of different things, but when we're talking about weight, we're talking specifically about size, right? And can those different sized bodies come to a class and feel I always say, like, can they leave feeling successful, right? Because I think that's what it ultimately comes down to.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting that you say that too, because I'll never forget, like, whenever I was a group fitness manager, one of the roles that I've had, we had a yoga instructor who did not fit the stereotypical mold of what we assume a yoga instructor to look like in a gym. Like, she wasn't this tall, lean, you know, person. She was in a larger body. And I will remember I had a member come up to me and she said that she had never taken a yoga class before, never even considered taking a yoga class before, but she gave it a shot because it was at the time slot when she could be at the gym. And she said she'll never forget that she said to me, this yoga instructor looks like me. I never thought that I could come to a class and see an instructor who looks like I look. And I think that's a big, like, that's a big dissonance we have right now in the fitness industry too. There's just a huge lack of representation of people that look like the population that we're trying to serve.
That look like other people. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like this assumption, right? Because that just perpetuates, I think, the challenge, right? Of, well, I have to be a certain size in order to start moving, right? And you and I both know that that's not true. There's activities that you can do at any size, but when you don't see that, well, that only makes the issue bigger, right? I guess you could say,
psst, it's me, Katie. And in case you haven't already noticed, I kind of care about you getting results. Now, I'm not talking about results as far as body fat composition or the number on the scale, but I'm talking about implementing the things that you are learning here each and every week. Head on over to Facebook and just search Fit Friends Tribe to request to join our group. This is a free Facebook community where we talk about the podcast episodes each week, and I give you action steps on how to implement what it is that we talked about so that you're not just listening, learning, and absorbing information, but you're part of that top percent, that top 2% that actually takes action and changes their life. So facebook.com, search Fit Friends Tribe. I'm going to ask you a few questions to make sure you're not some weirdo from Antarctica, and we'll let you in. See you there. All right, back to the show.
So what is, in your opinion, what do you see are some, and we talked about this a little bit, but what do you see are some of the challenges from an industry level?
I think a lack of representation definitely is a major, major challenge. Again, there's not a lot of instructors who aren't straight-sized white women. And that's in my area. I don't know how it is mm-hmm. everywhere else, but even like thinking about instructors that I've hired that have been, you know, coworkers of mine and peers of mine, they have all very much looked very similar to me. And it's just, it's wild to think that there's people out there that don't fit this criteria, that don't fit this view of what an instructor should look like. And I think if we're wanting to reach a community of people, that we've got to be more inclusive, again, with size or with race or with age or anything like that. And I think that there's also a big challenge that we run into is the assumption that all fat people, or any people for that matter, are exercising for the sole purpose of trying to lose weight. And I think from a higher level, like from an instructor or personal trainer's perspective, learning how to get over that essentially and starting to understand that there are other reasons that people are pursuing movement and fitness and exercise that have zero to do with weight loss. Like, how can we as an industry help elevate that a little bit? How can we bring that up? And then the biggie is just a lot of like the weight loss centered messaging in a lot of mainstream fitness programs and in our gym marketing and things like that. And at the end of the day, like, it all trickles down. Like, going back to the whole lack of representation, I don't know if you've experienced this, but like, have you ever gone to any of these fitness conferences where, you know, you go and you take all the classes and you do all the things? Thinking back on that, like, I can never remember going to a fitness conference and seeing someone who was not a very thin or, you know, lean bodied person as a presenter at any of these conferences I've ever been to.
Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. And I want to come back to this, that messaging, but you brought up a such a good point that I don't want to miss is because I've had clients who have expressed this to me or other fitness instructors express this to me that they've been in classes where the instructor, like you said, has made an assumption just because of their body type, assumed that they've never moved, like they've never exercised before, or that, oh, their goal must be weight loss. And I think part of the problem, right, is maybe it's this just lack of education, but recognizing that fitness professionals are also humans.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's so interesting. And so let's tie that back then to like the language, because you started to talk about just the language. What are some of the challenges that you see as far as the language goes that is used?
I don't know, but I'll get to that in a second. But I do like your point, like fitness instructors, we are like, and I'm not trying to speak negatively to anybody, because we are humans and we all grow and learn and unlearn things mm-hmm. just at such a different level. And, you know, we all do have different experiences that lead us to different places in our careers and in our coaching and teaching other people. And I think that's, to me, it's something that's missing from a lot of like mainstream fitness programming and certifications is bringing in more size and weight inclusive language and teaching people and mentoring other instructors and other trainers and teaching them how to incorporate messaging that isn't as problematic, that isn't so centered and so focused on weight loss and burning calories and things like that. Like even thinking about, again, back to whenever I first started teaching, pretty much like probably any other instructor ever, I just basically regurgitated what I heard from other instructors, like when I took their classes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that I regurgitated, looking back on it now, like it's very embarrassing to think mm-hmm. about some of the stuff that I said. But we speak to what we know. And when we don't know other ways of, you know, like talking to our clients and talking to our classes, it kind of, it perpetuates some of this stuff. But again, like we know what we know.
So how do you feel like, I mean, I know we started talking about this a little bit, but how can that weight loss talk or cueing from a gym or from a trainer or just, you know, in the fitness community, how can that be, how have you seen that it can be damaging?
Well, I do know, like whenever I first started teaching Zumba, at the time it was like very like popular, right? When Zumba was emerging and everybody was taking it, everybody was doing it. And in the marketing materials, like it was exercise in disguise, like it was a very attainable form of movement for people who had not previously exercised, because it was dance, it was fun, it was loud, mm-hmm. it didn't feel painful, it wasn't like boot camp or anything like that. But at the same time, in those marketing materials that we received as instructors, and again, this was probably like 8 or 10 years ago, was that you can burn up to 1,000 calories in an hour-long class. And by golly, like as an instructor, you better believe like I regurgitated those exact mm-hmm. stats in quotes, mm-hmm. back to my class. And like thinking back on that now, like that's not something I would incorporate in my class at all now. But I think back on this time and thinking about how many people I said that to, like how many times did I talk about this specific, you know, burning up to 1,000 calories in one class, and how many times did that get heard by other people? And then how many times did they repeat that to mm-hmm. other people when they were inviting them into class? And just that being the focus instead of we are coming together as a community to move and to dance and to have fun. Like that's thinking back on that now, it kind of hurts my heart a little bit to know that I at some point have probably perpetuated some of this. But then again, at the same time, like you don't know what you don't know.
Right. We know better. We do better. I mean, I literally worked for a company called Beachbody.
Like, yeah.
Beachbody was plastered on everything that I did in fitness. So, I mean, I get it. it is the industry. It is the culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think like it's a huge motivator for me right now to continue to mentor and to educate and just to talk to other people like in the fitness industry and bringing some of these things to light that, you know, there is another way. We don't have to constantly talk about no excuses and no pain, no gain and all of this stuff. Cause these phrases, like we don't really think about it on a surface level, but they can really have like some lasting impacts on the people that we encounter, especially when it comes to their relationship and their behaviors with exercise and having just these almost like negative associations that exercise has to be this chore or this thing that we do that we don't really like to do. And I would encourage any instructor or personal trainer like to remove almost any body talk, I guess, that's not necessarily mm-hmm. associated with the focus on education, like talking about the function of the movement and this is why we're doing this and this is what muscle we're working and that sort of thing. And removing any other body talk away from that, I feel personally like that's kind of the way to go.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like you said, there's so many other things that we can focus on. There's so many other amazing benefits of movement. We as the professionals need to take that initiative to expand our vocabulary, learn about something else if we find that it's hard to find those words. So for somebody listening who is a client, is a, you know, member, what are things that they can specifically look for in a gym, in a trainer, in a, you know, boutique fitness studio when they're trying to find something that isn't maybe so triggering?
So I think now, especially right now, with everybody and everything being on the internet at all times, getting on and doing a little bit of research ahead of time, checking out a gym or a trainer or a class, see if there's anything about it on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, just to kind of to see if it meshes with the feel and the vibe that you're looking for. Checking out the website of whether, again, if it's the gym or an instructor and seeing what's out there. Because you can pretty much find out anything you want to know about anybody by doing a little internet research before, you know, making that commitment to join or participate. And I think looking out for some of that negative messaging, again, like excuses are for quitters and never miss a Monday and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Looking out for some of those things, some of these common like cliche things we initially feel like this is, you know, this is what fitness is, this is what exercise is, and almost developing a little bit of media literacy around that almost.
That's such a great point. And I want to share a quick story that actually happened to me recently. So I received an email, this was probably a few months ago at the beginning of when everything shut down. And it was from a local, but it's franchise cycling studio. And I was blown away. This email was all about weight loss and get to the cycling class so that your family doesn't recognize you when you go home from the holidays. Like just horrible. I mean, I'll have to pull it back up on Instagram. Horrible messaging that just made it was so cringy. I mean, so that's a perfect example, right? That you can learn so much about a company, a brand, just by looking at their messaging. Mm-hmm. Anyways, my point to that studio really upset me because it was a great experience. I had loved going to their classes, but I will never go back because that's not something that I want to give my dollars to and support.
Exactly. Yeah, doing a little bit of research to see where you want to spend your money, if it aligns with the experience that you're looking for, the values that you have, or, you know, even some of the changes that you want to make. Because I think especially right now coming out of COVID, well, not coming out of COVID anytime soon, probably, but people, you know, beginning to explore, you know, some outside opportunities, maybe like taking classes, or even if it's taking a virtual class or hiring a virtual trainer or anything like that, you know, there's always two sides to every coin or whatever. And mm-hmm. some of what I'm seeing within like my own communities and within my own circles is that people are so just overwhelmed and stressed out by life anyway, to add the additional pressure and stress to try to go lose a bunch of weight or to feel like, you know, we have to do this thing on top of all the other things right now. It could be a huge breath of fresh air to stumble across, you know, a program or a class that does have messaging that promotes things like stress management, better sleep, get out and be around some other people and, you know, cultivating a community and that sort of thing, especially right now when everybody's so just very isolated, I guess, and having being home forever.
Yeah, isolated and stressed out. And I can share another, you know, from my experience, I've also have been, right, because as fitness professionals, we still need coaches. We still, you know, go through our slumps and whatnot too. And through my research, kind of a figuring, you know, okay, what I'm feeling not motivated. I'm feeling just like to the point where exercise is a chore. And I stumbled upon, you know, another workout that I assumed was going to be numbers driven, weight loss, like I assumed just because I'd never taken it and it has numbers. So I assume it's going to be one way. And I was blown away that it was actually the opposite. It was very data driven, but in a way that me even not recognizing, right, that numbers can be a trigger for people, that it was very empowering. It was very much speed, athletic performance. And that was something that, I don't know, I thought it was interesting.
That's a neat way to kind of spin things. So that's neat. And there's a lot out there. Like there's something out there for everybody too. And that's one thing that hurts a lot with fitness messaging is that we assume that fitness and exercise has to be this one thing and it has to look this one way because my cousin did this workout and does all these things. That's what I have to do, even though it doesn't feel right for what I enjoy. So I think that's really important is to do a little self-assessment to kind of understand what it is that we like and what, you know, what are we looking for? And working kind of backwards that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't like it, keep looking. Cause like you said, yes, there's something out there. So what are some of the challenges that your clients struggle with in particular? And how is it that you help them work through that?
Well, I kind of am looking at this from two perspectives. So I've got the clients and the participants that are coming to my in-person classes. And then I have some one-on-one clients that I'm working with online. And some similarities that I've definitely seen sort of cross the board with both of them is that a lot of the people that I see and that I talk to do come from kind of a chaotic and busy lifestyle. So whether it is, you know, they have a very high demand job or they have a high demand job and children or they just have children, whatever, you know, the combination or the case may be, there's a lot of chaos, a lot of busyness, but a lot of high motivation. Like the people and the clients that I see and that I work with are very highly motivated in one area or another part of their lives. They tend to be yes people and, you know, want to do right by the team and by all the things. But because of this, something that a trend that I've definitely noticed is that there is a lack of boundaries because there's a lot of multitasking going on. There's a lot of struggle to prioritize self-care. And I'm not just talking about like getting a massage or, you know, drinking wine in the bubble bath or anything like that, but like basic self-care, like forgetting to eat or, again, just saying yes to everything and overbooking themselves and getting into this place of chaos and reactivity. And that is a big struggle I'm seeing right now, especially, which is kind of, it feels kind of counterintuitive because a lot of people are working from home now and jobs and things have shifted due to COVID. But at the same time, finding that balance of work and life and parenting and all the things while being at home because of COVID has been a real, real, real struggle that I have noticed. And a lot of what I've been doing is helping some of my clients incorporate just simple, mindful eating practices like taking, you know, step away from the computer for 10 minutes and eat lunch, not at your desk, or incorporating just some basic movement, maybe 10 minutes at the beginning of the day before they start their work day and 10 minutes of walking at the end of the day when they finish their work day, and just finding practical ways to incorporate some of these self-care, like basic self-care behaviors into their lifestyle has been a major focus, especially right now.
Yeah, I think recalibrating or readjusting our standards a little bit during the season is important.
Yes, for sure.
Sadie, this has been so great. I think we've really got some tangible tips, some tangible takeaway for people who are looking to either reintroduce fitness, introduce it for the first time, or just really take, you know, that the next right step. So I love to end with a little bit of a rapid fire because it's fun. So tell us, what is your favorite podcast right now?
Right now, I recently just started listening to a new podcast. It's called Entrepreneurial Outlaws. And
I have not heard of this one.
Well, it's great. The host is Melanie Knights, and she gives a new spin and a new perspective on doing things differently in online business, which I think is much needed right now, like questioning the status quo and all the gurus, the internet marketing gurus out there, and just creating a successful online business on your own terms that are more in alignment with your values. And it's basically like for nomad online business owners who really want to create some immense value without like selling yourself out and to a smaller audience. So that's been very relevant to me right now during this season.
Yeah, that was my first thought was, sounds relevant. Yeah.
Yes.
What about your favorite beverage?
So since I live in the Asheville, North Carolina area, I don't know how familiar you are.
I didn't tell you this. My husband and I went there for our honeymoon. Because we got married in April and then that was like very, very tiny. And then we had to push back our party. Anyways, there's a whole other podcast for that. So it was in August. We were like, where is somewhere that we can drive? We were supposed to go to Hawaii. So we went to Asheville and it was wonderful. It was so much fun.
Well, it's a great place to be. Well, we have like, I don't even know, like 50 or 60 craft breweries around the region. So my beverage of choice is definitely local craft beer, but specifically right now, there's a lot of really good seasonal drinks out here. And we have one brewery called Asheville Brewing, and they make this beer called Ninja Bread Man. And it is a porter that has like Christmas spices in it. And it is a seasonal favorite for sure.
Love that. That sounds delicious. So then sweet or salty?
Sweet. Always sweet.
Gingerbread. We should have known.
Yes.
And then what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
So we just this weekend transitioned my 3-year-old. He's been in a crib since he was born. And this last weekend, kind of reluctantly, we transitioned him out of the crib into a big kid bed. I was really scared about that, honestly. I was afraid he was going to be getting up and like walking around our house in the middle of the night. I honestly did not know what to expect. And for the last 3 or 4 nights, he has slept better than he has slept in months. He's not yet wandering around the house. He doesn't quite understand that he can actually get out of the bed himself.
Because he hasn't figured it out yet. That's why, right?
Hasn't figured it out yet. So I'm like crossing my fingers that we maintain that for a little while. But that's been a very good thing that has happened this week.
I love that. More quality sleep for everybody. Always a good thing.
Yes.
So where is the best place for our listeners to find you and to connect with you?
I am most active on Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram at @TheSadieSimpson, which feels kind of weird to say because regular Sadie Simpson was already taken. So @TheSadieSimpson is the best place to find me on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to tag Sadie in and put all her contact information in the show notes. And this was so great. Such a great conversation. I think we were learning that we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn. We have a lot to unlearn, but we, like everybody else, we are a work in progress, and you at least have 2 weight inclusive trainers right here that are working to change the industry.
Yes. It was great talking to you today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook @FitFriendsHappyHour. Talk to you next time.